Howie Carr, Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
By the way, do we have Howie Carr?
He's around here someplace. Where's Howie? Where is Howie?
You know Howie Carr?
Howie, where the hell are you? The legendary Howie. He's got that radio going.
We love Howie Carr, right?
Yeah.
I was referred to today as 1970s Boston.
Hey, paperboy.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
He's a good guy, isn't he, though?
It's Howie Carr.
We are back on the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Howie. Thanks for being with us today. I was talking earlier about how Democrats aren't used to being asked hard questions. That reminds me of this Katie Porter story. And it's been a minute since we've revisited it. So I want to remind everyone what happened. Katie Porter, she is the Elizabeth Warren protege who ran for the U.S. Senate seat out in California. She was in Congress. She ran for the Senate seat against Adam Shifty Schiff. Nancy Pelosi, the grifter, put her thumb on the scale and helped Schiff lock it up. So Katie Porter, she runs for that. She didn't get it. So, you know, these people, they can't move on. They got to run. They got to have public office. They got to be in politics or they have nothing else to do with their lives. So she's now running for governor of California, which in California, basically, if you're the Democrat, you might win. So you're just going to beat all the other Democrats. If you win the primary, then they have that jungle primary, right, where you get to be one of the top two candidates and then you advance to the general election. So Katie Porter, she was looking pretty good, and then she went and did an interview. And Democrats aren't used to going and doing interviews where they get asked questions that they don't want to answer. Now, in this particular instance, Katie Porter was given the questions, or at least the topics in advance, and she agreed to them. All the other candidates were given the same topics and the same questions. And this is how she reacted to the reporter. Cut number 12.
But let me be clear with you. I represented Orange County. I represented a purple area. Mm-hmm. I have stood on my own 2 feet and won Republican votes before. That's not something every candidate in this race can say. If you're from a deep blue area, if you're from LA or you're from Oakland, you don't have an experience.
But you just said you don't need those Trump voters.
Well, you asked me if I needed them to win.
So you don't.
I feel like this is unnecessarily argumentative. What is your question?
I feel like this is unnecessarily argumentative. She's just like asking a follow-up, like, what are you saying? You said you don't care about the Trump voters. Well, I don't need them to win, she says. I don't need them to win. Okay. Well, thanks. I mean, if you're not going to be governor for the whole people, but if you don't get them, they could go to someone else. And in the final runoff, I mean, it is going to matter. But okay, so she doesn't care about them. She doesn't need them to win. The reporter doing their job, and again, this is the whole like Whoopi Goldberg, like, oh, Republicans are afraid to come on our show because they don't want hard. Well, no. Democrats don't get asked hard questions. And so the reporter follows up, does a great job. Cut number 13.
The question is the same thing I asked everybody, that this is being called the empowering voters to stop Trump's power grab. Every other candidate has answered this question. This is not
argumentative. And I said I support it.
So, and the question is, what do you say to the 40% of voters who voted for Trump?
Oh, I'm happy to say that. It's the do you need them to win part that I don't understand. I'm happy to answer the question as you have it written, and I'll answer it.
And we've also asked the other candidates, do you think you need any of those 40% of California voters to win? And you're saying, no, you don't.
No, I'm saying I'm going to try to win every vote I can. And what I'm saying to you is that...
Listen to her. She doesn't want to answer the question. She doesn't want to deal with it. She's not used to not having control. Answer them as you have them written down. Like, this is the Joe Biden. Give me the questions in advance and let me just give you my prepared answer. But she doesn't like being called out when she's being dismissive of people that voted for President Trump. And so what does she do? She ends the interview. Cut 14.
Well, to those voters. Okay, so you...
I don't want to keep doing this. I'm going to call it. Okay. Thank you.
You're not going to do the interview with us?
Nope, not like this. I'm not. Not with 7 follow-ups to every single question you ask.
Every other candidate has answered our follow-ups.
I don't care. I want to have a pleasant, positive conversation in which you ask me about every issue on this list. And if every question you're going to make up a follow-up question, then we're never going to get there.
Ms.
And we're just going to circle around.
I am an investigative reporter.
I have never
reporter.
Had to do this before, ever.
You've never had to have
end
a conversation with
to end
a
an
reporter?
Interview.
Okay, but every other candidate has done this.
What part of I'm me, I'm running for governor because I'm a leader. So I am going to make...
So you're not
going to
answer questions from reporters?
Never had to do this before. I want to have a pleasant, positive experience here. Taylor, I'm not going to take calls anymore because I want to have a pleasant, positive experience. And I don't know if the calls are going to make that happen because I'm me. I'm a leader.
Oh, well, if you want a pleasant experience, I'm just going to go home too.
I mean, like, I just don't understand. Like, I'm a leader. I'm running for governor because I'm a leader. Well, you can't answer follow-up questions. Asking follow-up questions. You gave me a list of topics, and if you're going to ask me follow-up questions on them, like, no. Well, I want pleasant. So she hates it. She absolutely hates it. And so this is what she does. And she tells her she's not negative. She like berates the reporter, says you're being too argumentative. And then after that happens, now there's a crack in the armor. This video from one of her staffers comes out. Now, again, I know you've heard all of this before. I'm just resetting the stage for, I think, what is the best part is how she's now talking about it. So this next leaked video comes out, and it's her doing an interview. I think she's doing some clip for Biden that's supposed to, like, support Biden, talk about the climate change agenda. She's giving a on-camera talking points, and she's doing it. And then a reporter, one of her staffers, tries to correct her and listen to how she reacts. Cut 11.
What it showed is if we don't electrify our transportation sector, that we're going to lose more than 500,000 Californians dying prematurely to air pollution and other problems. And the state could lose. Get out of my shot.
I wanted to tell you that that's actually incorrect. It's not that it's electric vehicles. It's that if we don't meet the commitments under the Paris Climate Accord.
Okay. It does. Okay. You also were in my shot before that. Stay out of my shot. Okay. I'm going to start again with electric vehicles saving us money.
I mean, usually you say, like, show me how people behave when they think no one's watching and when the camera's not on them. The camera's on her the whole time. And that's how she feels emboldened as a leader, as her being her. That's how she thinks she should talk to people, to the staffers. And I think you watch how people talk to the people that they work with or who work for them. You learn a lot about their character and personality. That all has made the rounds in the internet, and there's rumors that there's a lot more out there because she's been treating her staff this way for a long time. She must be terrible to deal with. And so she's been kind of laying low, thinking that it was kind of career ending. Her poll numbers have torpedoed. And so I think it could spell the end of Katie Porter. But now she's obviously spoken to someone in PR. She could be in a PR specialist who's taught her that she needs to take accountability. She needs to take accountability and own it and try to move past it. So here's her first attempt to try to move past this scandal. Cut 8.
Should California voters feel confident that there aren't any more Katie Porter videos out there?
Well, what I know is that I could have done better in those moments. I'm going to be focused on earning their votes and earning their trust. That's true in every election. I've only ever had tough elections. Mm-hmm. So I'm absolutely aware that I'm going to have to continue to show them. I'm going to have to answer every question. I'm glad I got to continue that interview and finish that interview and answer all her questions. And that's what I'm going to continue to do, to show Californians not only that I understand their problems, but that I have the will and the strength of character to actually get something done about them.
Yeah. I'm so glad. I'm so glad I got to answer that, all those questions. I'm glad I got to finish that interview, continue the interview after telling, what did she tell the reporter? Cut number 15.
Okay. Why don't we go through, I will continue to ask follow-up questions because that's my job as a journalist, but I will go through and ask these. And if you don't want to answer, you don't want to answer. So nearly every legislative.
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you, and I don't want this all on camera.
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you either. I would love to continue to ask these questions so that we can show our viewers what every candidate feels about every one of these issues that they care about.
She's glad she got to answer them. But notice she says in the moment, like, I don't want to have an unhappy experience and I don't want this on camera. Yeah, you know, you realize you're embarrassed. You're embarrassing. But no, I'm so glad. I'm glad and I own it and I can do better. But she noticed she didn't say that there aren't going to be more videos that come out showing who she is when the cameras aren't rolling, because there will be. You know, there are going to be. So the reporter at her own peril, the new reporter, the now reporter, asked Katie Porter, okay, you didn't answer the question. Like, are there going to be more videos? And again, to her peril, she's asking a follow-up question of Katie Porter. Very dangerous thing to do. Cut 9.
But not just the CBS interview, the interview with the staffer. Can voters be confident that there won't be another one of those videos that's going to come to light?
What I do know is that I could have done better on that situation.
But that's not a no. So is there potentially another video that we're going to see?
Nikki, I'm going to be honest with you. I know that that video, and that video was several years ago, as you know, and I apologize to the staffer. That's super important to me, and will continue to try to hold myself to do better. That's what I can promise.
When do you think she apologized to the staffer, Taylor? Do you think she apologized to the staffer when it happened or when it got leaked to the internet?
After it got leaked, I'm sure.
It's super important to her, though. It's super important to her that she did do that. Super important to her that, I mean, she's been coached. This whole thing is this like PR pablum, like BS that, like, she's not sorry. She's sorry she got caught. She's not sorry for her behavior, and she's not going to try differently because she's a leader. She is her. So this intrepid reporter tries for a third time. Okay, so yeah, you apologize to the staffer, but like, that's still not a no. So like, should we expect to see more of this? Like, is this what you do all the time? Cut 10.
But not that there's not going to be any more videos, because that's what people are wondering. Are we going to see something else like that?
I can tell you what I've told you, which is that I am taking responsibility for this situation, and I'm also not going to back down from fighting back for California, from being tough. I don't think this is a moment where the same old is gonna cut it. But that doesn't change the fact that what I did to that staffer was wrong. I've acknowledged it to her in that moment, and I'm acknowledging it now.
Yeah. So again, she's expecting more videos to come out because her behavior is abhorrent. She's the type of person that you don't want in control. You don't want her in an executive branch. You don't want her to have a staff. I mean, 508, you make a good point. 508 says Katie Porter must pay very well. Why would anyone work for her? I mean, I don't think they will. I think, you know, there are people that think, oh, I'm going to be the one. I'm going to get in here. I'm going to have this. But then you put people that are terrible in these positions of power and they mistreat the people underneath them. I think it's terrible. No one was accusing her of like, oh, we want you to back down and stop fighting for us, Katie Porter. No, we just want you to be a decent person. And as a candidate running for office, asking Americans, Californians, anyone for the privilege of earning their vote, you should feel like you have to answer questions about what you believe, and that includes follow-ups. More Howie Carr Show when we come back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Howie Carr will return.
This hour of the Howie Carr Show is brought to you in part by Jake Rooney's in Harwichport. I love their tender steak tips, and the mailroom manager always gets their lobster roll packed with freshness. Come hungry and leave happy at Jake Rooney's.
Howie Carr is back.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. 844-500-4242 is the number. Did you hear this cut, Matt, of Nancy Pelosi calling Trump a grifter? Why don't you go ahead and play it for us? Cut one.
You wonder why the American people tolerate a grifter like this in the White House. A grifter family, you put money into their account, and then they say you can buy chips, high-powered chips from the United States. That's an emolument clause of the Constitution.
I mean, she's now rediscovered the emolument clause because there's this grifter living in the White House. Where was Nancy Pelosi's concern for grifters when Jim Biden or Hunter was selling his paintings, when he was blowing paint through a straw so that, like, oh, no, we don't know who it is that's paying like $500,000, $1 million a painting for prints of these paintings that Hunter is selling. I mean, grifter. She's the biggest insider trader that we've ever seen, trading on money from the American people, information from the American people to enrich herself and her husband. That brings us to today's poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Byrna Less Lethal Pistol Launcher. For those who want a powerful self-defense option without resorting to deadly force, visit Byrna.com/Howie to save 10%. That's BYRNA.com/Howie. Matt, what is today's poll question and what are the results thus far?
And you can vote in the poll question by going to HowieCarrShow.com. Who is the biggest grifter in American politics? Nancy Pelosi, the Bidens, the Clintons, the Obamas, or the Trumps?
I've gotten to answer this a couple times already, so I'm curious. What do you think, Matt? Who would you vote for as the biggest grifter in American politics?
So I didn't pay enough attention, like, earlier in my life, enough attention to, like, the Clintons. So I wouldn't say the Clintons, although now I probably would lean that way, but the Bidens for sure. I mean, with all the deals that Joe's given his brother for overseas construction and all the Hunter Biden shenanigans that have been going on over the last however many years, it's definitely the Bidens for me.
Well, the thing, too, about the Bidens versus the Trump, like, example that Nancy Pelosi is citing, right? She's saying, oh, do you do this? Then I do that. Like, whatever. The difference between any of the Trump stuff in their personal lives, the money that they're getting for anything, they have legitimate businesses that are actually doing business and have done business all their adult lives. Whereas Hunter Biden and Jim Biden, it was all straw man stuff. It was all like money for influence, money for access. It was a complete grift, completely. I still would go with the Clintons. I mean, but I think the Bidens were the most brazen and the most unabashed at doing it and really just like paying for access and influence. But the amount of money the Clintons were able to use and channel and launder through the Clinton Global Foundation and the Clinton Family Foundation, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
The Clintons have 33%, and tied with them are the Bidens with 33%. The Obamas have 22%, Nancy Pelosi has 9%, and the Trumps have 4%.
And I mean, the Obamas are getting a little bit left alone here because the other two are so egregious. But I do think that they were able to cash in on their donors, and they got paid for nothing. And then all the deals they got, the sweetheart deals afterwards. But again, that's because Obama was like a president who became a celebrity, where I think Trump was the other way around, where he's a celebrity who became a president. 844-500-4242. Let's take a call. Let's talk to Alan. Alan, you're on the Howie Carr Show with Aaron Chadbourne.
Aaron, thanks for taking my call. First, I just want to say God bless Donald Trump and God bless Benjamin Netanyahu, because these two men are taking on pretty much the world right now. This dark, dark force that's overcome this world. You know, the light of the Christians right now, I mean, since Charlie Kirk was brutally slaughtered in front of everybody on TV. You know, I grew up and got to see, you know, the astronaut blow up, and that was just an object that blew up. You know, the JFK, you never really get to see that. But our children right now have got to see this over and over on TV and on our internet. And it's just so nice to see Donald Trump getting these hostages back, the hell they've been through. And right now up here in the state of Maine, the audacity of Janet Mills to think she's going to come out and run for senator just makes me want to just throw up. This woman is an absolute disgrace. She's an absolute tyrant of a queen. She's gone against everything that the people want. Our power bills we can't even afford because they worship the planet and they follow in China right next to each other. And when she wants to do something, she has to ask the permission. Now for Graham Platner to step out on the field, he makes me want to throw up too. You've got a nice, a real Marine that calls up your station named Mike. That's a real Marine. He knows his country. He knows the enemy. And for Graham to come out and to take money from Act Blue, he takes money from George Soros, a man that likes to destroy nations. He goes on TV and tells you everybody that he likes to destroy nations. And Act Blue is nothing but a fundraising for these people that hate America. And it's so nice to see the hostages come back, because Kamala Harris, I'm telling you right now, wouldn't have got these people back. They tried to make a bridge and give more money to Hamas. Where are these people right now? Where are they? Hamas is executing Palestinians. I don't see any gray-haired Nazis out there on any bridge telling Hamas to stop executing Palestinians. You know, it's just so upsetting, because I've had to witness all these people from Harvard, all these people from Columbia, all these kids that have been brainwashed from the beginning, like Rush Limbaugh used to say, they're just skulls full of mush, and it's absolutely true. I love you, Aaron. Keep it going.
Thanks for the call, Alan. A lot to get off your chest, but I couldn't stop you. You're on a roll. Thank you for the call. Appreciate the commentary, both on Donald Trump. And I think Trump right now, the rhetoric he's using to hold Hamas to accountability, to make sure that they disarm, and he says, disarm or we will disarm you. I think a lot going on there. I do want to talk about Janet Mills again. We'll do that when we come back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
No matter when you visit.
It's Howie Carr.
We are back on the Howie Carr Show. 844-500-4242. I am Aaron Chadbourne, broadcasting from Portland, Maine. Special shout out and thanks to the Portland Media Group and WGAN for letting me use the studio, broadcasting remotely. The caller before, speaking of Maine, had brought up Janet Mills and Graham Platner. Now, I think this is interesting. Both Graham Platner and were on MSNBC yesterday. Mika apparently has a mutual friend with Graham Platner. I don't know who it is, but he is apparently on with Mika. He's tight with Mika, and he goes on and talks about running, talks about Bernie Sanders. And he was commenting on Janet being in the race. But Graham Platner was ready for Janet Mills. He was ready for Janet Mills because it was a worst kept secret that she was getting in. And this was the ad that he had ready to go when she announced. Cut number 34.
Janet Mills again. She was a good governor, but I think it's time for change.
What about that oyster farmer, Graham Platner?
You can tell that he has got a heart for the Maine people.
He's a Marine, and he was in the Army. We need someone strong to beat Collins.
He's a real Downeaster. Maybe he could shuck up the system. The way things are right now, we need somebody who's going to take it to Trump.
I think he'll really fight for us.
I'm Graham Platner, and I approve this message.
All right. So, first of all, really, really good ad, really good spot. Whoever is writing them for him is doing a very good job, politically speaking. Effective. I think it's effective. I think Janet Mills again. Oh, it's time for her to move on. I mean, they also
maybe he could shuck up the system.
Well, that's that whole oyster man shtick, which I don't know if he is or isn't an oyster man. I guess he is. He says that he is, and in the commercials they show him with that. So I guess he is. I'll trust but verify. We'll have to learn more about his actual business as an oyster man. But they've done that. They created this caricature of him, this Paul Bunyan-esque figure that is an oyster man. Makes him relatable. He's an oyster man. He's not a elite. He didn't go to like Colby or Bowdoin or Harvard or Columbia. He's an oyster man. He's a hard worker. And then they say, oh yeah, he's a Marine. He was in the Army, which by the way, I can disagree with a lot of people on policy and the direction of our country. But if he served this country, I'm not familiar with his service record. But if he was a Marine, he was in the Army. I think he went to Iraq and Afghanistan. And then I just say we got to appreciate and thank him for his service. So thank you for your service. I'm not sure that I'm going to want you to serve in this new capacity. So I can separate the two. But thank you for wearing the uniform and serving the country. Now, he's created this image of himself as this strong, you know, male, masculine figure, this oyster man, this Paul Bunyan here to save us. Got this deep, booming voice. He's talking about what he's going to do. So he's setting himself up as this character. But then along comes Janet Mills. Along comes Janet Mills, recruited by Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer to protect the New York establishment from these insurgent socialists. And Janet, she gave this interview the other day, 5 days ago, before announcing. She gave it on embargo to the Trust for Local News here in Maine, which is a George Soros-funded nonprofit that's bought up all the newspapers. And by the way, Janet Mills has been funneling no-bid contracts to them to run paid advertisements for the Department of Education and for other parts of the government, and so writing puff pieces, which I'm surprised that she had to pay them. But now she pays them to write about glowing articles about her government, and then she gives them this embargoed sneak peek preview. This is what she had to say to them days ago before announcing. This is the interview she gives to them. Cut number 32.
It'd be pretty hard to face my granddaughters, to look them in the eye and to say that I hadn't done everything I possibly could to protect their freedoms, their rights, when I had the chance to do so. I'm not going to let them down.
I mean, she's going real hard to portray herself as like a family person. Her original ad was about her dad, which at the age of 77, I don't know why you're talking about your dad. I don't know why that's the first thing. It doesn't really scream youth and daddy stuff to me, but that's what Janet Mills chose to do in her first ad. And in her interview, she's talking about her granddaughters. It's all about her granddaughters and her future. And she has to be able to tell them that she did all that she could. She has to tell them she did all that she could to stop Trump. It's all about Trump. Trump, 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 Trump. That's what it's all about. And I don't think that's going to be enough, by the way, for her to overcome Graham Platner and to get the nomination to be able to take on Susan Collins. She's going to get through him first. And so maybe she thinks that she can do it by tricking people, talking about her dad, talking about her, thinking about family. And so that's what she's doing. But notice when she's asked about Graham Platner, she does not want to talk about him. She's not ready for it. She wants to just kind of be dismissive of him. And that's worked for Angus King in the past. When Angus King has had these no-name people, Zach Ringelstein and other people that tried to run, he's just dismissive. But listen to what Janet Mills had to say about Graham Platner, Cut 33.
We've run people against Susan Collins before, and she has won. She won handily the last few times. And she won because we ran people who were untested. Okay. I don't know much of anything about Graham Platner. I know a couple of the other guys who were running. One of them is a brewer. That's one reason I said I'd have a beer with him. But listen, I'm the only one in the race who's actually won an election. And that's important to have that under your belt. I'm the only one in the race who's actually delivered progress for Maine people, expanding healthcare to 100,000 people in the state, fully funding education, providing free school meals in all the public schools, providing free community college, 2 years of community college for all recent high school grads, you know, signing into law paid family medical leave, helping draft it and sign it into law. These are huge things, and it's taken a lot of work, a lot of effort, and I have that experience. So I'm the only one in the race who has stood up to Donald Trump. Therefore, I think my candidacy is far different than anybody else's.
Trump. All right, so here's what she said in that. First of all, she said the people that we've run in the past against Susan Collins have been untested. And the thing I love most about that is it's this subtle dig. I mean, it's meant to attack Graham Platner, but it's actually a dig at Sarah Gideon. She's the former Maine Speaker of the House. She was a very, very poor performing Speaker of the House, had one of the worst tenures in the history of Maine, got very little accomplished, wasn't able to manage her way out of a paper bag. And she ran against Susan Collins last cycle. She was Chuck Schumer's preferred candidate, recruited, and she was basically a puppet. She didn't have anything to say for herself. And before that, do you know, Matt, who ran against Susan Collins prior to that?
Not a clue.
A young political upstart by the name of Shenna Bellows. And Shenna Bellows, back then, hadn't been Secretary of State, hadn't tried to violate the Constitution by throwing the popularly elected front runner for the nomination, former president, off the ballot. She hadn't done it. The big thing stunt that she did, she walked the entire state of Maine. Like, she walked from one end to the other. That was her thing. So Janet is actually taking a dig at Shenna Bellows and Sarah Gideon, which I'm here for. But then she goes on to say, oh, like, let's stack my record up. And all the things that she mentioned in her record are debatable. And I think Susan Collins, if Janet Mills makes it through the primary, I think Susan Collins is going to devour her. She talks about funding education. We're spending more per capita, more per person, more in absolute terms as well on education. And we have the worst results, some of the worst in the country. Certainly worse than we were spending less. She talks about the paid family leave, which, you know, a lot of people like the idea of paid family leave. But they don't like the new tax that she put upon employers and employees in order to fund it. And it's not even, we don't even have the benefit yet. We're just paying in taxes after she made a no new taxes pledge and said she wanted to do it. Thing after thing after thing that she says in there is actually a liability for what is on her thing. And she says, like, this Graham Platner, he's not tested. But what she should be worried about is that he is resonating with the populist wing of the Democrat Party. And he's done it in this way with his friends, the Ron Mamdani and Bernie Sanders, and their connections are getting in places like in Joe and Mika. Here's the clip of him on Morning Joe speaking to Joe and Mika and laying out his case. Go ahead.
Graham Platner joins us now. Graham for Maine. Actually, I know someone who works with Graham, so I've heard a lot about you and your campaign. You've raised money in small donations, and you've had some key endorsements. But now, Governor Janet Mills is jumping in the race. How does that change the game for you? Graham?
Mika knows someone who works with him. Doesn't it make it sound like she knows someone, like, on the oyster yard? Like, someone out on the docks, on the wharf? But what do you want to bet that it's a political operative that's working for his campaign that planted her on there? And that's the thing you need to know. Not only does he have the kind of savvy and this caricature that they've created, but he has the connections, he has the political apparatus, and he's actually building, I think, a pretty effective campaign so far. So it'll be interesting. I'm ready to see them fight each other. I'm ready to see who comes out on top. 844-500-4242. Let's grab a call. Let's talk to Dr. Luke. Dr. Luke, you're on the Howie Carr Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Oh, wonderful. I was listening to a commercial for Graham Plattner, and honestly, it was sounding like he's going to do great things. Honestly, and listening to Janet Mills, she's taxing the state of Maine at a rate that's to me unsustainable. She's subsidized a whole new industry, the solar industry, getting rid of dams, which are to me the greenest energy there are. Graham Plattner and Janet Mills, they're all Democrats. We need some Republicans. Let's change the direction of Maine, people. And we need, she was talking Trump this, Trump that. We need some more Trumps. Trump solved 8 problems around the world. And we need some more Republicans like Trump in the state of Maine. Let's save our state. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Dr. Lou. Couldn't agree more. 844-500-4242. I mean, I think we've seen what Janet Mills can do, and people can decide for themselves. Do they want more of that? Do they want to export it to the country? I think what we've seen in Maine, whether you look at the fight that she had with Trump over transgender athletes, whether you look at the results in education, if you look in the results in the COVID pandemic, small businesses closing, the increase in the tax load, what she's done with the abortion laws in Maine after saying that she wouldn't touch them if she was elected, I think you just realize exactly what that could be and what it looks like. And so I think that it will be it'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. Interesting to see how this plays out. I also just can't for the life of me, and I talked about this with Jason Savage on the air yesterday, I can't understand why someone would want to trade having the senior senator from Maine chair the Appropriations Committee, give Maine representation in the Senate in a way that's going to benefit the state, to have the most junior senator there that's not going to be able to get anything done. If she stays, she'll stay one term. She said it would be one term, but they all say that. I think Colin said she wouldn't run again. I mean, you can't hold people to it. But when she gets elected, she's already the oldest governor in Maine's history at the age of 77. Next year, she'll be 78 when she gets elected. She'll turn 78 in December. She'll be 79 by the time she gets to Washington. Is that really kind of the youth and energy and vitality? I think she's got a problem. I don't know that she's going to make it past Plattner in the primary. And if she does, I think it would be crazy for people to pick Janet Mills over the current senator. 844-500-4242. Let's do one more call before break and talk to Dave. Dave, you're on the Howie Carr Show.
Hey, how you doing today?
Great.
Good. So Graham Plattner, Mount Desert Island, he's a oyster farmer. Well, Mika and Joe have a house in Seal Harbor, and they broadcast out of their basement all summer long. They've got a boat that they keep in Somes Sound, and there's your connection. They all know the same people because they all hang around on boats.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you've been there. You know that when you talk about him being a man of the people, if that's where he's living and that's who he's hobnobbing with, then I'm not sure that he's exactly this salt of the earth.
Yeah, he's definitely not a man of the people, but, you know, he's an oyster farmer, and it's not like he's out there digging clams in the mud flats every day. Well, it's a whole operation. A lot of guys do it around here, so... Yeah, I mean, he knows everybody. Gee, I work on Joe and Mika's boat. So, I mean, you know, and I don't hobnob with them, but, you know, we're all here together.
No, I appreciate the call, Dave. I'll tell you, I don't know him. And so I'm open to meeting him. I'm open to learning more. I'm open to being corrected on any of this. I'd be happy to meet him. But I think I know more people in Maine than Joe and Mika do. And I've not met yet someone who actually knows him. I've met people that have gone and seen him speak somewhere, or that went to the Stop the Oligarchy tour with Bernie Sanders just to see it, to see who this guy was, to see Bernie Sanders and what they were about, or that have gone to one of his rallies to kind of check it out. But I don't know anyone that knows him. So I will reserve it. If I'm wrong about anything, I will own it. But something about it just is a little bit suspicious where this guy came from all of a sudden. 844-500-4242. More of your calls when we're back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Follow Howie on TikTok.
We're looking at TikTok.
At Howie Carr Radio Network.
The name is hot. The brand is hot.
Mm.
Howie Carr is back.
Stop me if you've heard this one before, but a federal judge on Wednesday blocked the Trump administration's plans to lay off thousands of federal workers during the government shutdown, saying it appears to be politically motivated. U.S. District Judge Susan Ilston, a Clinton appointee based in California, ruled from the bench after an afternoon hearing, saying that the administration isn't following legal requirements for conducting reductions in force. Why do you think, Matt, that this suit is being brought in California?
Because it's a more liberal area?
It's venue shopping. It's venue shopping. Why are you doing it? The federal government is located in Washington, D.C. If you wanted to bring it, not that D.C. would be any more favorable, but they want a district court judge from the bench to issue a ruling to tell them they can't do it because it's politically motivated. Now, do you think that Russ Vogt was out there being able to show the plans that he had and the ones that he had drawn up? Because she can say that it's politically motivated, but this is probably all stuff Russ Vogt was planning to do anyway. He's just doing it during the shutdown to preserve the opportunity. Now, Trump does say a lot of things that would lead you to believe they're politically motivated. But that's part of what Trump does. That's how he talks. He'll use anything that's happening to make a point. And so I think when they actually go to the record and they see what's behind it, they're going to find that Russ Vogt, who was the OMB director in the last Trump administration, is actually knows what he's doing. And he's gotten it ready. But Trump does speak out and say that it is the Democrats, and the Democrats are to blame, and that they are going to cut their departments. Let's take a little President Trump. Cut 21.
Can I put it in plain words for you? And you're a smart guy, so you all understand, but a lot of people don't. The Democrats are getting killed on the shutdown because we're closing up programs that are Democrat programs that we were opposed to. So we're being and they're never going to come back in many cases. So we're being able to do things that we were unable to do before. So we're closing up programs that are Democrat programs that we wanted to close up or that we never wanted to happen, and now we're closing them up. And we're not going to let them come back. The Democrats are getting killed.
Yeah, no, I think Trump is absolutely right on that. I think he's absolutely right that the Democrats are getting killed. I think that he's taking the opportunity to close the programs. And Katie Pavlich, I thought, had a good commentary on it. Cut 22.
It seems that Democrats are willing to sacrifice their own programs for the sake of going after Trump. And when they stop getting those checks, the Republicans can say, look, we 3 weeks ago now passed a continuing resolution to make sure that those checks would come through. Democrats are perfectly happy with getting these programs defunded because the government is out of money for the sake of having a talking point against Donald Trump. All Senate Democrats have to do is vote for this continuing resolution, open up the government, and then they can ask for this $1.5 trillion in pet projects that they're demanding on a clean CR, which
so
is
so where is the court to rule that the Democrats can't block funding the government? Oh, but if Trump doesn't do it while they're closed, it's his fault? This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.